Welcome to the Concept 101 podcast. My name is Daniel.
Jules.
Stefan.
We're three concept artists currently working in the film and games industry, as well as the organizers of the Concept 101 event in London. And today we're going to be talking to you all about the life cycle of a professional project. So myself, Jules and Stefan have been very lucky in our short careers to see the kind of birth and completion of multiple projects at different stages, jumping on at different points. But we've all been able to kind of see through, you know, what happens over the potentially often like many, many years sometimes for some projects, how they go from, you know, start to completion, which has been amazing. So we thought with regards to that, it'd be great to jump in and talk about the different types of work that you often have to do during these different stages, the different skill sets that are required, and how that also differs between films and games, which we all obviously have experience in.
Yeah. Awesome. See, I guess we're going to, I can start with the film and TV type of stuff. So usually when a director or someone else has an idea of how to make a movie, they kind of get a few writers, a very small team of just friends, I assume, and they're like, okay, great, I have this great idea of a dinosaur movie. So we just need to find funding for it. We just need to make it work. So how do they get the funding? How do they present it to like Netflix or Disney or other people? Well, they need to work on a pitch. And this pitch needs to get some artworks in there because that's the sexy stuff. That's how you kind of, I guess, get people excited about the movie, you know? And so this is what is usually considered, at least to my experience, as pitch work. So directors and their team, maybe a production designer at that stage, they would reach out to us and they would be, great, we have this amazing idea about this dinosaur movie, which has a flying dinosaur who is doing a backflip, but to sell it to Disney or to anyone else, we'll have to make a visual of that. And then we're going to work with them for like a few weeks, maybe a few days, maybe a few months on how to create the pitch work. A pitch document. Yeah, pitch deck. A pitch deck. That's pitch it. Deck, yeah. And that's going to be useful for them to then go and get funding.
Mm. Generally, that early stage pitch work is very rough, which also makes it some of the most fun stuff to do. Mm-hmm. It's also, generally speaking, some of the more highly paid stuff in the industry to do if you're doing it from a freelance perspective. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find a lot of the really, really experienced artists who work in the film industry, that's often what they go on to. They'll jump onto like multiple pitches per year, working very closely with directors, which also comes in part, I think, with why it's quite well paid generally, because you're working much more closely with directors than usual. But the goal is really often with that pitch work for film to just get the mood and the idea of the script and project out rather than anything super specific. It's very rare actually that concepts from a pitch kind of travel the whole way through to the end of the production. Yeah. But it is a super fun stage to jump in at.
I just want to ask, when you do this kind of pitch work and you deal with the clients who could be the directors or something like that, do they always have to be famous directors? Like, just curious. Or like, would this even be someone who doesn't have necessarily a name, but they're trying to build their name, they would come to, you know?
Well, I think it at where we are working right now, and with my experience, it depends as to, of the budget they have, right? Because same, if you're a freelance artist, if you want to work for free for someone who doesn't have money and is not famous, then it's your choice.
Yeah.
Usually people who get in the situation of being able to afford concept artist or an art department, they have either a background which makes them trustworthy of working for them, or they already have some sort of funding to a very small scale to which they can just kickstart the project.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So it happened to me that I worked for like some smaller directors, but still established peoples. They might not be the, you know, the Spielberg, but they're still very established in their own field. So, yeah, but that's working within a department, I guess. And as a freelance, it's up to you. If I guess someone reached out to you and you feel like you have enough money to work for very cheap or for free, then I guess you can work for whoever you want if it is a very exciting project.
The advantageous thing about jumping onto a project at pitch point is that usually people, both whether it's like vendors or freelancers, are often doing it to potentially get more work down the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a very, very short turnaround of stuff. So you might only work on a pitch for, say, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If that means that you then get to crack down on over a year of work after that point because it helps the film get approved and then you have a good relationship with whoever did it, it's very much worth it.
Yeah.
I think it is a very interesting thing as well, because generally speaking, a lot of pitch work, I think, is what we would associate with a kind of like classic concept art, maybe like the kind of concept art even that people were making like 10 years ago, where it's just like a lot looser and a lot rougher.
It's more artsy. Like you could, it's like a lot of photo bashing, not more, you know, like you don't need to go crazy in 3D because you don't have that much time anyway. And you don't have the assets that a whole department has been working on for like 2 years. But yeah, I think the reason why so many freelancers and famous freelancers go towards pitch is because it is the quintessence, yes, I'm saying this word, of concept art, which just means like raw fun and the biggest impact that anyone can have on the project. Because, you know, you might have an idea of, oh, what if the dinosaur who's flying is actually not a dinosaur and it's a man, and the director goes like, great idea. Then maybe they change the brief for you, you know? That's pretty sick. It might not happen, but if it does happen, that's like pretty cool that you can have such a big impact and you're part of the conversation and you're working directly with directors, which tends not to happen that much down the line in the production.
Yeah. The other thing to say though is that with pitch work, if you do it, it is also the most likely to end there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Pitch work, especially in films, often can go just nowhere, which can be very disappointing, obviously. But it kind of is what it is. So a lot of pitch stuff will go. The directors will look at it. They'll love it. Maybe whatever producers are directly around them will love it. And then it will go to whoever is actually trying to fund the film.
Mm-hmm.
And they will just say, nah, we're good. And they pull it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just doesn't go beyond that point, which is always a massive shame. But I think people would be surprised how many pitches essentially get pushed out to these studios before anybody even says anything that greenlights it, essentially.
Yeah, and some projects also, I mean, being in industry, you kind of hear about some names of projects which have been around for like 10 years, 15 years, and they keep being pitched, and they keep being like brought forwards, but then it's always dropped, and it's like, oh, wow, it's like,
there was a pitch I worked on when I started in the industry, and the day I started on it, my boss at the time pulled out this old like library of work on his computer and he went, oh yeah, I worked on this. And I went, oh, no way. How long ago? And he went, 11 years. And it was because one company had owned the rights to this IP for like 15 years and it was finally doing the cycles again. And it's funny, I've actually seen that IP thrown out like in my career, like multiple times.
Yeah.
Like, not necessarily always me working on it, but I've always heard, oh, this person's working on it, or this person's working on it. And yeah, a lot of these things go through like literally just churn through directors and cast essentially on a constant basis. And some of them just never get made.
But I imagine some of them will get made eventually. It's just like, you always, I mean,
maybe.
I mean, you always look for something fresh, and nowadays there isn't that many new fresh ideas, I think. People are potentially looking for something new rather than just like the Avengers number 15 movie.
At the end of the day, you know, it's like a pitch, very cheap to make. Going forward with a pitch, making a movie, insanely expensive to make and very risky. So a lot of them have to go away, I guess. This is probably a nice segue as well to what's the equivalent to pitch in video game. What's the equivalent to early ideation in video games, and because I assume that a lot of them get pitched in the same ways and then get cancelled.
Yeah, so what I've heard, a lot of the pitches do get cancelled in games, especially like the early stage. In fact, I heard that most that games are not to be considered released until things have been announced, almost. Like, even if you've worked on something on studio for many years, unless it's been announced, you can never be sure that your game will. Even if it's like 3, 4, 5 years down the line, you have everything set up, you just never know. So that's like still uncertainty. I know, you know, it happens in movies as well. Potentially projects will get canned. But yeah, so pitches is definitely something that happens in games. I have never experienced it quite in the same way how you guys did, where it's like a director, you work with a director, he's pitching something and maybe it's like 2 weeks work, or maybe he gets like a pitch together, which is like a 1 month pitch, and then he goes and pitches it to people who give me money for it, and then if they like it, like, goes on. It's a little bit different in games, because really, you would, I believe, when you do a pitch, you will also have to, like, potentially build a little bit of a game with it,
mm-hmm.
And then go to stakeholders. But even then, I think you already will have, like, someone behind you. Like, because as a game company, you are not doing, like, I don't know. I just don't think you will be doing the traditional, like, pitch work like,
yeah,
that,
but
that
I,
much.
I guess that's
as a game company, you know? Yeah. Like, if you are doing internal, let's say you are Sony Santa Monica, right? Mm-hmm. They will be doing pitches mm-hmm. themselves mm-hmm. for Sony, right? But at that point, they already have funding, right? Sony is paying them. Like, all they are trying to do is, like, get Sony approve a project and mm-hmm. give more money towards it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they, you know, if they don't do the pitch, they'll just, you know, work on something else. It's not, I don't know if that makes any sense. But
yeah, totally. I mean, my experience in games work is working on games pitches, which are quite, I would say it was really fun work. It was really enjoyable because I got to do a lot of kind of art direction stuff on it and talk a lot about, you know, what was actually happening in the game and what the gameplay would be and all this stuff. But what eventually ended up happening was, I think I worked on this project for a few months, and we finally got to the stage where they wanted some kind of, like, beauty frames just to kind of, like, start establishing the project a little bit more. And so I started doing thumbnail stage, which was like a day. Then I did, like, some slightly more refined roughs of what they wanted. They picked one. And then as I started working on it, I emailed them for, like, a contract renewal. I was like, hey guys, I was like, so just to make sure we're going to spend this amount of time doing this just before this contract ends, and then we're going to start a new contract here. Yeah. And they emailed me back and they said, oh, sorry, we've actually just moved on to a new game, so we're going to give you a new project brief tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. And it was a totally different game with totally different assets. And then I was doing keyframes for this thing that had only existed for a few days. And so it was quite funny. I guess it's a different type of volatile, whereas it with a film pitch, when you're pitching, you're not like, it's not like you would ever change direction. It just ends or starts, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas with a games pitch, because games generally have a slightly broader range of funding, I would say, and they're not like just a sole person's vision usually as well. They're part of the, like, the studio, right? Which has its own internal revenue streams. They have the ability to say, like, yeah, maybe this is working, maybe this isn't, and then just, like, pivot to a totally different idea.
Yeah, or, like, bounce back a different idea and, like, kind of combine other stuff.
I think it's, like, a good point. Like, if you've gone on YouTube and watched the making of Skull and Bones recently, it was on YouTube, like, how they changed the direction on it.
Oh, that's,
like,
on YouTube.
That's a good kind of video to watch to understand, like, what can happen throughout the game development. Sometimes, like, game development cycle where, you know, the idea of, like, oh, we're making, what is Skull and Bones? It's like the pirate something game, right?
Yeah, it's a
with both
pirates, I don't know, shooter looter kind of game.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, the idea was, like, oh, it's a pirate something game. They were trying to, and initially they were trying to make it kind of like off of the success of Black Flag and Assassin's Creed, right? They're trying to replicate something like that and make it a multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the whole time, the idea changed. Just the core idea of it stayed similar, but, like, the whole writing potentially changed. The whole, what is it called?
Gameplay.
Gameplay as well changed multiple times. So this happens in games a lot. But, so.
So as a question, because you're talking about kind of similar pitching something in video games, from, I never worked on a game, right? So is that similar to, is that what Vertical Slice is, or is Vertical Slice different?
No. So Vertical Slice is something, once you secured funding from whoever is giving you funding, you already have an idea. When you are pitching it, you're not just pitching artwork, you are pitching the story, and you're pitching the gameplay as well, and the gameplay loop, all of that. That is what Pitch Deck is.
Okay.
It contains all these elements. And then they give you the money for Vertical Slice, let's say, or whatever you're doing, like whatever stages you have, but the initial 1 year stage, let's say, that you work on something, they give you money for it, and then you go off and you build a small part of the game, let's say.
So that is like pre-production?
Kind of.
Once
but then,
you're past that point. But even then, I mean, games still, have so many different rounds of funding, unlike films. Where once you've got Vertical Slice, you're essentially pitching for more funding.
Exactly.
To then do the next slice of the game.
Exactly. So you're constantly in this pitching phase until you go into pre-production, I believe, when the game is already in pre-production. At that point, you already have the game. You know exactly what it is. You don't know, and you just need to build the rest of the game, essentially, like when you get into the pre-production.
Yeah. The other difference is as well in games, right, that a pitch is far more extensive than for a film. For a film,
yeah,
really what we're doing is we've been like, here's the visuals. Look how cool it's going to be. This will look good on screen. Whereas for a video game, they're going, here's the visuals. Here's the gameplay. Here's the story. Here's how the characters will work. Here's the AI system we're going to use. Here's everything.
Sometimes
the engine that we're going to use. Are we going to build this in-house? No, we're going to use a custom physics engine that we're hiring this guy to build. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's like also like, how are we going to make money with the game?
Exactly.
Like, play, is it going to be like Game Pass for film? It's like,
put in cinema.
People watching it. It's gonna be money cool. making.
Trust me.
Yeah.
In games, they do like studies, like what is the market looking at right now?
Yeah.
The 2.5% is chance that this will be the better kind of title to go for.
And then
for
they go,
something.
No matter what the market says, they go, it's got to be an extraction shooter guy.
Yeah, yeah. My God, dude, that's what it felt
imagine
like.
Fortnite and Tarkov.
Dude, as soon as I'm shitting, I'm telling you, like when Fortnite came out, I'm sure that this is what was happening in the industry. It's like, look how much money Fortnite's making.
Yeah.
It was just like Call of Halo and Call of Duty had exactly the same effects on the industry, right? Yeah. Everybody started copying it. I remember when Call of Duty got really, really big, like it had that like peak period around like MW2.
Mm-hmm.
Every single game was just copying Call of Duty. Yeah. And I was like, just absolutely a deluge of the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
It was great. Loved it.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's...
I like repeater of the...
Yeah.
If there is something that works...
I mean, this happens all the time, even on movies, right? You see a cycles of similar movies and then it switches to something else. Like, I guess now we're seeing a bit the downfall of superhero movies. They get a bit less and less... Mm-hmm. People are a bit less excited by it. I think now, same with video games, it was like...
I want to go back to cowboy films.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Good. Cowboy era. Yeah.
Remember that movie? What's the name of that movie? It's like Cowboys versus Aliens.
Yeah, with Daniel Craig.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Come on, man.
I don't remember it, but I remember being a kid and being like, holy shit, that's so cool.
The much better cowboy film is Wild Wild West.
Oh, that's my childhood.
With the
so good
steampunk Will Smith fighting tiny crab man
with the tank.
It's
such a cool thing.
We should watch that film.
The CGI in that movie is questionable.
No, it's good, I think. It doesn't take me out of it. I watched it fairly recently.
Wild Wild West and The League of the Extraordinary Gentlemen. That's my childhood.
With Sean Connery.
Yeah. The guns they have, the bad guys, are so cool. It's like Space Marines Bolters, but in real life. I really love it.
Yeah. I can't... I wish I could do a Sean Connery impression.
I could do it if it was French.
He's not French, so I cannot.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah.
Shall we move on?
So as we know, watching Wild Wild West is an essential part of pitching.
Yeah.
But once you're past watching Wild Wild West with your investors,
eat spaghetti in your movie. That's the question.
I mean, what's next? I mean, so in film, we move on to pre-production. So generally, this is when a film's pitch has received funding and the green light to go ahead. Prior to really like jumping into concept art pre-production, there are a few things that happen. Generally, a smaller film team will go out and do things like location scouting.
Oh, yeah.
There will be some concept artists working on the film prior to like full-blown pre-production beginning, but usually it's a much smaller condensed team, maybe just like sometimes one to two people.
Yeah. So I guess storyboard, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, how does the location tie in to the story?
Yeah.
How can that look cool in the thing?
But it's generally just figuring out like, okay, how are we going to shoot this? Where are we going to shoot it? Which teams do we need to organize? Starting to put together your actual film crews. For example, if you're doing a leg in Morocco, right? And you're doing a leg in LA, can you have the same crews doing each of these things? Mm. Probably not. So you already have to be looking for like first and second ADs for these different locations. Maybe even a different director of photography in some cases, right? Depending on people's scheduling. So that's really like when concept art starts getting involved, the film production is generally already in like completely full swing. There's like probably a few hundred people working on it at that point already, just trying to get it going, which can be quite fun and exciting to jump into. Yeah.
But the filming hasn't started, right? Because it's pre-production. So
yeah, I think pre-production extends the whole way from film about to start and then actually starting the whole way through to it having finished being shot, essentially.
I want also to mention that, for example, on TV shows, they would be filming the first episode of a TV show as we would be working on a design for like 5 episodes down the line, right? And then as they film the 5th episode and we'll be working at the end of the season, and as they finish the first season, we'll already be on season 2. And so like this is a, I mean, I guess depending the budget of the project, of course, but it's some of these elements take time to kind of go forwards, and as a concept artist you're always working a bit before the production.
Yeah, it's interesting to know that they don't like pre-plan. There must be some, like if they do a TV show, like I've been watching the Severance TV show, I mean, yeah, to be fair, like it's a pretty simple sets and stuff like that. But I imagine for a more complicated TV shows, like let's say talk about the, what is the sci-fi TV show that I watched,
Foundation.
Yeah, Foundation. Yeah. Like did they, ooh, do you think
watching
they,
it too.
Oh, it's awesome. It's an awesome show. Do you think they pre-planned all everything in,
yes,
in advance?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So they pre-planned everything.
Also, it depends on the TV show, right? The one I was talking about is a TV show where every episode renews itself quite a lot. So every episode is a brand new story.
Oh,
so
okay.
For that, we had to kind of, you know, work in this type of pipeline, I guess. But yeah, I assume if you do like any other TV show where there's like, you know, maybe 10 locations across the whole show, then you know the set is going to be used many, many, many times throughout the episodes and that kind of stuff.
But also the thing is, like, well before a concept artist even gets involved, it's just like the amount of prep work that has to go into, yeah, just shooting somewhere, like getting filming permissions, for example, is a massive thing. There was a film that I worked on once where they had planned to film at a very specific location. They turned up on the day, 300 plus crew members, the cameras, all the rental equipment, the lights. And then when they arrived, they found out that the PA that had put in the request for filming had filed it incorrectly, and they had to leave, which cost them like, you know, that's like $100,000 or something, probably completely lost just from doing that. And so then they had to go and find a different filming location, and it became a nightmare. Films are like, I think, generally very, very chaotic. They're a little bit all over the place sometimes, especially when you're in them. Sometimes you can be talking to somebody and you can just be like, why am I doing this? What's happening? But they are also very tightly coordinated. I think where the chaotic element comes in is when those unexpected things happen, which then throw things off course. Generally, they are budgeted and kind of put together on a very, very tight deadlines.
Yeah.
So with the second something goes off, even by like half a day, it throws the whole production out of kind of flow.
Yeah. It is by default a very kind of a fluid process, right? I mean, because as people design sets, the script might change again, you know?
Yep.
And as the script changes, we're going to do new concepts on the scripts. And we're going to work with the sets and with the scripts to how does those two changes look at the end, and like how to implement all those changes. So it always changes.
Yeah, interesting. I thought like, for some reason, I was thinking that there's going to be more change in games. Like, for example, I never thought that that script could change in a movie or a TV show.
It changes until the same day, I feel like, sometimes.
Yeah. And that was insane. A big thing for the writers' union strikes as well, was talking about how many writers that directors should have on set.
Yeah.
Because generally, you have a larger writer room at the start, but you always have writers around to continue reworking the film as you go. Because as you see something being filmed as a director, you might realize like, oh, that line of dialogue is actually terrible. So then having three writers sitting next to you, and you can just be like, rewrite that. And they go, all right, give me options. And they go, okay.
Yeah.
I don't like this burger. No, now it's, I don't like this tacos. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I mean is usually like far, obviously broader ranging things than swapping a sandwich for a taco. But
that was a problem with a lot of the movies which carried on during the strikes, is that they didn't have any writers on set anymore.
Yeah.
Like a few of those productions carried on. And that was a big trouble. Like, because, yeah, I mean, we don't know yet, but I think a few of those projects might have weird writing at some point because they didn't have anyone capable of fixing it available on stage as they were filming.
Which, referentially, just remember to anybody listening, there is a real tendency to blame writers for like bad scripts and films. Just remember, it's usually not the writer's fault. It's writers telling them to change things in their scripts.
It's, you know,
I have a lot of sympathy for them. Yeah,
totally. I think we're in a similar boat. I mean, I guess we probably have an easier life than they have because we are a bit later in the process. So we maybe get less impacted by other people's choice. But, you know, just budgets. like I've been asked to redesign the same thing many times when it had been greenlit, just because they were like, oh, turns out we don't have the money for this effect, so we need to look, it needs to be cheaper to make.
Or the opposite thing happens where they say, we've got a lot of money, let's rework this. And then you just do 100+ variations of like some tiny thing that will be on screen for 1 second.
And it, you know, and then sometimes like, oh, this guy left the project, so we have a new guy who turns out he wants to, you know, put his own
mark.
So screw all this, we're going
to
redo it.
His name's not Mark, he just wants to make a mark on the project, just to clarify. I'm sure there is a guy called Mark who's done that, but we're not talking about anybody called Mark. So Mark, any if you're listening, Mark, we're not talking about you.
If your name is Mark, and then you sign your piece of concept, you leave your mark.
Mark.
Think about it, guys, think.
Mark always.
You know, if we had TikTok, that would be a short on TikTok with like,
thousands of views.
Just staring at Jules very disappointedly right now. Anyway, so
games.
No, wait. Oh, We're not done yet.
No.
Because there's one more thing we have to talk about, which is what skills you actually need to have to do film pre-production work.
Yeah.
Which is, all the generally, skills. To be honest, it's all the skills, right? It's very similar to pitch work in some ways. You often will be doing that messier title work, especially, again, if somebody changes a script thing and you have to do something
a little bit
very quickly.
Less fast, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit less fast. Rather than working on, say, two concepts a day, you're doing one a day, maybe, you know, one to two, 3 a week.
It varies. Sometimes you do. I guess varies production. I've been in the situation where it's like very, very fast, and some of the situation is like, oh, you've got a week to do it.
Yeah.
So it varies, I guess, the project. Something that changes compared to pitch, though, is that it is slower, but it's also expected to be tighter work, right?
Yeah.
It needs to look better because, again, then you need to convince everyone on the table when they're going to pitch it to, like, well, if the production designer wants to design a set and you're helping him, then he's still going to have to go to the director and pitch this design to the director. So he needs to have something that looks good and something that makes sense in order to get the set greenlit.
Yeah, and also another thing is that generally all of that work that you produce will probably have some involvement with a bit of a 3D process, because a lot of that work will then get carried over to the production designer, where they're going to then potentially use it as like an SDL and print it and, you know,
still
rework
work on the
it.
Sets.
And, yeah, on sets, on anything really, a prop, a set, a character design, having that kind of more 3D process is a lot more expected in that stage. Just because, you probably will have to show it from multiple angles. It might have to be built, and you have to give a much clearer idea of like the physicality of whatever that object or thing that you're making is.
I guess the difference is pitch, you make pretty image to get people happy and excited about a project. Pre-production and production, you're not longer an illustrator. You are now part of a full-on pipeline, and people are on the movie before you and people are on the movie after you, and you just need to be useful to them. And you'll get, as Dan said, you'll get 3D files, we get a lot of things that people have done before you, and then you need to modify them, do your work on top of these, and then send it to other people, maybe like previs, maybe, as you said, people who are going to do the props or who are going to make the sets. And so you need to really fit within that pipeline. So I think 3D and like, 3D skills are essential at this stage.
Yeah. Okay, now you can talk, Stefan. We'll allow it.
Video games, pre-production. So pre-production in video games is not quite what you would think of pre-production. So before pre-production, there's another pre-production, which, so there's a pitch work, and then let's say you did your vertical slice, you got more money, you're not firing everyone. And what you're going to do next is build more concepts to fill out the world, because like when you are on the vertical slice, you are doing some of the production stuff as well. So you are not just coming up with blue sky ideas at this point as a concept team. You are serving the people who are building the game or something, whatever they are building. You are doing the concepts for them, for the 3D team, to make sure that they build it correctly, that it works, and you do overpaints. So you kind of go through this little stage of like building a game, and then you are at the beginning again, right? And you are trying to figure out the whole world again, but now in a bigger scale, because now you're building the next stage, right? It has to be a bigger scale. So you do kind of like some more blue sky exploration, essentially. And this stage can be as long or as short as it depends on the project, on the funding. hopefully it's longer. The longer it is, the more time you have to develop the world before you have to start doing production concepts again. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that can happen is if you just finished with like your vertical slice work or whatever, and then you need to start doing like exploring the world and doing concepts for the environment team to start, or like whatever character team to start building off of for mm-hmm. more like the final game, mm-hmm. because then it's just like and there's not a nice way to say it, but then it's just a mess of like doing two things at once, doing like polished concepts and exploring the world at once, yeah. figuring out our direction. So if you have like a little stage of this, which is like what's called the blue sky exploration, that mm-hmm. comes before the pre-production, mm-hmm. then you are a happy chap.
So what would be an example of a concept for that? Is it like, okay, let's go back to the dragon thing. Yeah. So there's a game with dragons.
Yeah.
So is it like you do whatever you want within the world that has dragons and then you just do your thing? Or do they give you more rules? I guess it depends on the project. But
I think there is usually going to be a little bit of a script written yeah. to it, or a little bit of... something, even if it's like maybe 5 sentences or something like that, or maybe 10 sentences long, mm-hmm. That will describe potentially a couple areas. And at this point, you are just, if you have multiple people, they'll all do something like, we'll all be like, I'm working on the beautiful forest or something, right? With fairies flying mm-hmm. around. And then another dude will be working on deep sea,
the ugly forest,
the deep sea, the deep sea with dragons that are flying, that are swimming through the deep sea. You know, yeah. we all will have these things, and we can all jump between each other's areas. But at this point, you're just doing concepts that are similar to what you guys were describing in the pitch as well.
Okay.
So you are just doing one of concepts. Maybe sometimes you do like 3 concepts related to the same thing. So you might use a 3D scene. But a lot of the time, you're okay if you're using a lot more 2D techniques yeah. because the concepts are just like kind of...
Before ideation.
Exactly, before ideation, and they might be explored later on.
Yeah, so there's at this stage, there's no level designers, there's no 3D modeler who's yeah. going to be like, dude, what the fuck is your 3D model?
Exactly, I need to model that. Yeah. No one's going to be doing that. At this stage, you're just coming up with ideas. And the closer you get towards the end of the stage, the more you'll be like, have to be like, okay, like this is the final idea and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And doing like more towards be like figuring out exactly what you're doing. Yeah. But the first, at the beginning, you're just doing random shit.
So, and because is that pre-production? Because
that's blue sky, kind of.
And yeah, then so it's that's pre-production. Exactly. And then you have pre-production.
And then you have pre-production where you already did your blue sky, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you'll be starting to do more what you guys said, where you're helping already the team mm-hmm. to build something. Mm-hmm. There already is a script. Not everything is fully figured out. But at this point, like the environment team goes, we need to build this underwater castle with dragons mm-hmm. Swimming around. Mm-hmm. And you already have the concepts for it because they were like, oh, it was in the initial concepts. We liked it. Yeah. And I have to go and design the castle properly.
Yeah.
I have to design the area properly. They will start building it out. And then you have to like do overpaints and shit like that.
So that's going to be... It's like turning your pretty image and your mood image yeah. into something that becomes useful for production. So yeah. it's like, as you said, so how does the castle work? But then what does that mean? Are you going to just model the castle, or are you going to do like a 3D sheet, like the model sheets of the castle? Or
probably the same that you guys
are. And are you going to be suggesting like gameplay at this point with your concepts?
Yeah, at this point you'll be... You're always want to suggest a gameplay a little bit, even if you're pre-production concepts. There should always be suggestions of like where the characters can walk around. Even like it's cool if you go, oh, this area will be like this during evening, and then during the day something will change and it's part of the gameplay, right? Mm-hmm. And people like that, even if you are in the pre-production phase.
Yeah.
But in the even if you're in the pre-production phase.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the actual pre-production, you have to pay attention more to the gameplay. You cannot do a sketch of a fort and then there's nowhere to walk around.
How many years into a development cycle are other people starting to get involved? Because at this point, it's what? It's you, narrative team,
I see what you mean, yeah.
who else? And then when does it start to become a slightly more fully fledged kind of thing?
Because game goes through like these many different stages of like vertical slice, you always have teams mm-hmm. or 3D people and, you know, people who code the game as well. Mm-hmm. So whilst you are working on like the pre-production phase, they will be working on their own pre-production phase, which could be like building tools, figuring out processes, making sure that
like gameplay loops.
Yeah, or maybe even like if they need to explore a certain art style, like they need to know how are they going to make their meshes, how are they going to make it. So like it's a lot of research that they'll be doing whilst you're figuring out the rest of the world.
Mm. Like you're doing the art direction pre-pro and they're doing the tools pre-pro.
How to build the sets pre-pro, what kind of hammers do I need for this?
The R&D. It's like, we have dragons, but how do the dragons know you're a player and you're here? Then you have to develop the AI for it and all that stuff. Yeah, okay, cool.
So that will be happening throughout the whole process.
And then you get to vertical slice, right? Which is kind of where real pre-production begins.
Yeah. That's vertical. So when you're in vertical slice,
Why don't you explain what it is as well first?
So we kind of talked about vertical slice, but the reality is like really before vertical slice, you have something, it depends on what company this is, but there will be something called like first playable or something like that, which is the thing that is like part of the pitching to the people. Or it's like when people already gave you some money and they said, do a proof of concept or something like that. You build it, but then you need to go back and figure out how to do a vertical slice, and your vertical slice is your actual game. So when you do a vertical slice, you already know what the fuck you're making. And if you don't, you're in a big trouble. So if you know what you're making in vertical slice, you just you know exactly like what the game's gonna look like. Whatever is in vertical slice will most likely make it into the final game.
Yeah. So it's like
no messing around at that point.
There's nothing comparable to that in a movie, but it's almost like shooting a short film, or like the first 5 minutes of your movie.
Yeah.
And then they're like, this sounds good.
It's vertical slice, the demo of the game, I would say. That's how I think of it. It's like when you play FIFA and you have that 15-minute demo, that's what vertical slice is. It's like a slice of the game that has all the playable ingredients in it.
Actually, I was watching the documentary of how they made The Last of Us, the part two, and at some point they're like, oh shit, we need the demo playable at E3. For journalists to play.
Yeah.
And it's like they explained this whole stage very well, this whole process very well. So you guys should.
I watched a little bit of that. It was fun. The bit that I focused on was watching John Sweeney throwing blood against walls and ripping apart bits of flesh with his teeth.
What? Yeah, there's a part of that.
Yeah, for the concept art.
No way.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff in Last of Us, the way they achieved that like hyper realistic look was to do a lot of first hand photography. So, and a lot of the realism in the animations as well came from them doing tests with like blood bags and stuff like that. So they just have like this big white room and then John Sweeney's in the middle of it leaning down with like a giant hunk of meat and he's like ripping into it with his teeth, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
That happens, right?
He's actually being a zombie. He's like acting like a zombie and like...
It's like totally covered in blood.
Yeah. And like you have people taking pictures of him and they're like, that's what we want.
Yeah. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
I've never seen that happen.
But I think it's nice when you get to have the time to actually explore first-hand kind of reference gathering in a project.
That's how you get to the level of details that these guys got.
This
game is such a... I mean, to me, it's an amazing game and such a crazy level of detail and masterclass that of course it makes sense that they go to such length to allow themselves to have the references and the raw material to then build upon. Pretty sick. Cool. So then you have your vertical slice, and then I guess vertical slice get greenlit, and then that's production, right? Then you just make the game.
After that you go vertical slice gets greenlit, and then it's not production. It's just like the start of you. It again starts as a pre-production, but it's just a different type of pre-production, right?
It's like pre-production for level two.
It's the pre-production for the final game. And then at the pre-production for final game, you don't do as much as a concept artist because the world is already figured out. Well, and like they could potentially start outsourcing your work as well at that point. Mm-hmm. And they might start, if you're like core team, they might start thinking of pushing you onto another project.
Okay. So like the next game.
The next game, but it just depends, right? Like, I heard different studios do it differently.
Yeah.
Like, I know like in Sony Santa Monica, they like when I watched the God of War thing, I know they like to have multiple projects running at a time. Mm-hmm. And actually a lot of big companies like to do that because sometimes a project might just end up going nowhere.
Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of people that you need to transfer quickly, yeah, or you fire them. If you have one project, you fire everyone.
Yeah.
You don't want that to happen. If you have two projects, at least you move them to another project for a while. That's what happened in God of War, for
example. It's quite impressive to see how many, like, now I think Santa Monica, they got a few projects that they talked about publicly. Naughty Dog have like many projects as well. And like also...
they cancelled like all of them.
Yeah, they cancelled a few of them, I guess. But the studio that surprised me the most I heard about recently is the people who do The Witcher and...
Oh, CD Projekt Red.
CD Projekt Red. They have like 3 Witcher games, I think, officially that they announced in production. And like Cyberpunk 2 in production. And like another license, I think. And you're like, but how many of you guys are working on it? But they just announced all these games that they're going to come out in like 2030.
It's like, very easy to say that you're working on stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
like Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, I could say I'm working on Star Wars. It may or may not happen in the future. Who knows? So, you know.
That's the dream, Dad.
If in 5 years' time I am, technically it was true. And if these games come out in 10 years' time, technically it was true as well. I mean,
yeah.
I think oftentimes a lot of these companies, you know,
I'm
they like
my
to...
own movie. Who's going to revolutionize the whole world?
I want to say, go on.
No, I was just going to say a lot of these companies like to say they're working on stuff because that's how they increase stock interest, especially when they're correct. Publicly traded.
I was going to say the same. And that's how they get people to... I mean, like when... Cyberpunk was announced. That was easy way for them to hire people, right? They announced Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Let's say they have problems with hiring people. They announced Cyberpunk. Boom, everyone's like, oh, I want to go work on that. They all apply to CD Projekt Red. Now they're finally hiring people, right?
And then it comes out 7, 8, 9 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching a thing even about Blizzard yesterday. And they were talking about how they had a bit of a slump during, I think, like 2018. And you guys will probably remember this. They went on stage at BlizzCon and they announced the Diablo mobile.
Yeah, that was...
And then everybody started booing them and all this stuff. No. And the reason they did that was because it wasn't a mainline game. It was produced by NetEase. And it wasn't even one that they apparently, theoretically, intended to even announce at BlizzCon because they knew it wouldn't be received well. But their stock price started to fall. And so they essentially... I mean, this could just be bullshit, but this is what was in the video. But... they had like lacking investor kind of like sentiment essentially, and so they thought, okay, we've got to announce some stuff at our big event. What can we do? Okay, here's this thing that NetEase produced, fuck it, let's do that, and we'll do a big stage announcement for that.
Yeah.
Which then obviously backfired incredibly hard.
Yeah,
but that is often how it works, right? Is and it's the same with films, right? A lot of movies you hear about them are like, this is in production, that's in production. There's loads and loads of stuff out there where like whenever somebody sends a pitch or even something that's in pre-production to me, I'll often just go on the internet and see how much is written about it, just to see like whether it's real or not. And of course, even like the earliest stage stuff where like nothing's even happened yet, you can find articles about it because these production companies want to push out, hey, we're working on this. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that cool? And the same for the directors. You know, someone always leaks something.
It's quite surprising actually because it's like, oh, this thing is so secret. And then you're like, what is this director up to? And he's like, oh, he's apparently working on a dragon movie.
Yeah.
We keep on the dragon team here.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, very secret movie. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, movie. Don't open that door.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So then you go into production in movies, right?
Well, I think production and pre-production are generally understood the same thing.
Okay, so just blending.
Yeah. Because again, as they build a set, you're going to help design the next set. Or as they... Okay. Yeah, I guess.
As they say, you're not doing good enough. You start crying. You know, all these things that happen at the same time. Yeah.
It happens everywhere.
But it's pretty much the same thing. I think, like we're talking about, your like games has a lot more stages to it. Generally in film, once you're in pre-production as a concept artist, not that much changes regardless of how much is being filmed until you then transition into post-production.
Okay.
Post-production generally can actually happen during filming as well, but it starts to begin once plates have been shot. Plates are kind of like in the film industry what we just call like any photography that has been done.
Yep.
Specifically for concept artists, it's photography that we want to work over. And so what happens is, let's say a director has filmed a really nice bunch of knights on a hill and you want to stick a castle behind it and you've got a vague concept for it. Well, our job is to go in, take that plate, quote unquote, cut out all of the important elements that matter, and then start replacing the elements that will be CGI in the background to show the director how that will look in the final shot.
It's like anything that's not fully on film. So as soon as there's like blue screen, green screen, or any creature who's not an actor, that's going to need some VFX on top, right? And as soon as VFX companies are involved in the movie, they start post-production. So, you know, even as Dan said, sometimes they're still filming, but they already filmed some part of the movie. Yeah. And because there's so many VFX shots that needs to be made, they're already going to start working on the matte painting, on the creatures, you know, because sometimes the creatures even are not designed before filming, or they're partly designed, or some secondary creatures are designed. They're like, oh yeah, just this company is going to make this creature appear here. What is it going to look like? That's a problem for tomorrow. Yeah. And then post-production will be designing this creature, designing the set extensions and that kind of
because work. Oftentimes, let's say even as a concept artist, we can look at, you know, the wonderful work that somebody like, I think John Park is a very good example of it, does, where he does these absolutely insanely beautiful paintings, right? But John Park's work might not be informative to a VFX crew who is looking for like hyper-realism as to what they actually need to design and build. It will give it gives everybody the information, it gives everybody the vibe and the mood and what we actually have to move forward with. So for example, on Dumbo, he did loads of like phenomenal paintings of like the circus tent area. Mm-hmm. But then artists that, I think it was Dean Egg, went in and took those things as mood inspiration and then redesigned them so that every single nook and cranny was kind of like visibly understood by whatever team had to jump onto it next.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's also good to point out at this stage that like the time that these things can happen can vary immensely. Like you could work on a pitch and then 5 years later the film is in post.
Yeah.
You could work on a pitch and 10 years later the film is in post if it has a really troubled development.
Yeah, or 2 years later.
Yeah. Or I worked on a film that was it was a pitch to the director from the vendor I worked with at the time, and from there it was 1 year until we were in post.
Yeah.
And so that some films, if they're like organized very efficiently or potentially have different legs of shooting. So for example, with that film, they were doing a leg in the UK and then they were doing a leg in New York. So that became like the two separate kind of like stints that they had to do. So they did the London leg first because it was easier for them with the scheduling. And then they moved all of the shoots over to the States to do the next bit. But because they'd already shot everything in London, it meant that VFX work could already be in like full swing production by that stage.
Very cool.
And so I guess movies that go that fast is quite unusual, but it's good to know that it happens. But TV shows very often move that fast. Like TV shows are and Dan is
choking. Dan is just choking down.
Like, oh, TV shows what? But yeah, TV shows do move that fast. And not even mentioning advertisements. If like you guys happen to do any advertisement work, that's like I guess you don't even do pitches. It's like do a concept. And the concept also is the post-production. It's like all at the same time in advertisement.
Yeah, same in music videos as well. Yeah. I did some music videos where, I think I've said this before for very...
You did.
Yeah. Did I break that NDA?
Yeah.
Whatever, Taylor Swift. It was her in her private jet.
Oh, no.
No, just joking. But that was very quick. I mean, that was like literally sometimes days in between, like do the concept, then they would build the set, then they'd film it, and then it was done. And I was like, oh shit, that was fast.
Like, what does it look like? We don't know. Okay, when do you need it for? Yesterday. Okay, when are you shooting? Tomorrow. And you need a prop? Yes.
Yeah.
and they have to make it. They haven't made the prop yet. And you're filming when again? Tomorrow. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, it's the timelines do massively change. Like you said, advertising, music videos, any of those slightly more, I would say, like, I mean, film is very commercial, but even more commercial activities that you might often have to do as a concept artist, those have incredibly tight turnarounds, for sure, where you can jump the whole way from pitch to post in a few days.
I want to ask about post-production work for movies. Like, do you... Because I know you do a lot of... I believe you do a lot of VFX during that time. Like, when I go through our station, I see people doing... I remember ages ago seeing, like, I don't know what's the name of the guy, but he's like this guy from Germany doing like for Marvel film, like a lot of explosions or like a lot of, what is it called? Like sonic beams or something. Yeah. I remember him seeing.
Sure.
And be like, I didn't know that that's something that you would do. And this is like tons of the work that you do in post-production, or is it different?
So depending on the company, you might be doing more or less VFX work like this, right? Some companies, they have a matte painting department where the matte painters would do a lot of VFX, or even like they would do R&D type of VFX stuff. But yes, it happens that you have to do explosions, loads of explosions, or any type of VFX-y thing like this on his like
magic.
Yeah, magic, yeah. It's also is a skill that's very different to the other type of concept art we usually do, which means that it's very heavily photobashed. So, and it needs to look very realistic because you're working on already existing plates, which is something that's been filmed, right? Yeah. So this work needs to be quite polished, quite good looking, so people can, so we can guide the VFX people on how to do it afterwards. Dan, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you want to see, if you're a student out there and you don't quite know what this kind of stuff is, some really good portfolios to look at are Paolo Giandoscos from DNEG. He has some really interesting different types of post-production work, which range from like animation to like some hyper-polished VFX concepts. But also Cole Price has some really good stuff on his portfolio, I think from the Adam Project, which is great, where you can really get a good taste of like the kind of work that, again, you might be asked to do. The other thing is post-production too, I think, is the time where you have to do the most iterations probably in a process. Post is kind of often where, again, like something hasn't been designed yet and the director is usually very busy at that stage. And so sometimes I've worked on some shows where I have, without joking here, done like well over 200 versions of like just an explosion for a director, and you'll be having meetings with whoever is in charge, whether it's the VFX supervisor or the director, and they'll be saying like, no, that explosion isn't lion enough. And you go, what? And they go,
what if it doesn't explode?
What?
I remember having a meeting with a guy about an explosion frame that needed to be designed, and they were talking about they were like, we want it to look like magic, but we also know that like obviously in this world it's not magical, but the director said he really likes the idea of it being kind of magical, like it's reaching out for the guy, but we obviously can't do that, but if you could do that but not do it, that would be really good.
Anyway, make it pop, right?
Yeah.
Make it look cinematic.
Make it pop. I don't know what I want. I'll know when I see it.
Yeah. I think the funny
thing, iteration 500 down layer. Daniel like drawing and then out of his cave.
And then they open back your first iteration. They're like, wait, that's amazing. That's what we wanted from the start. You're like, but
yeah, it's an interesting thing. It is often I think the other thing that's worth saying about post-production is that with pitch and pre-production, you're usually very attached to the core film crew, which is, I think, the most attached you often are as you're working with the production designer, which is the director's number two besides the director of photography, right? Whereas once you're in post-production, you are way more removed. So you are often removed by, you will be working with a VFX supervisor. Yeah. The VFX supervisor will then be working for a vendor, which is usually where you work, for example, Framestore in our case. Then that VFX supervisor will often be working with a client-side VFX supervisor. And then that client-side VFX supervisor will be working under potentially still a production designer and a director.
Yeah.
And so when you do one concept of, say, you're making Dr. Strange's hand glow or whatever, you're going through potentially five or more stages of approval, and often what happens is something will get unapproved before it even gets to the last stage.
Yeah,
that's which means insane. That even if you do like 300 versions of something, it doesn't mean that the director sees 300 versions of it.
Yeah,
which then can be very interesting because you're kind of playing a little bit of a game of Chinese whispers in a way.
Yeah,
where like I've had it in certain, again, like client situations where I've done something, the VFX supervisor has said like, make it blue, and I go, oh, I thought it should be yellow, and they go, no, blue, the director wants it blue. And then you come back to a meeting with them a week later and they go, why'd you make it blue, man? The director said yellow. And you're like, ah, oh, I'm sorry, yeah, that's my bad. You just kind of have to take it on the chin. But it's the stage where I think the most communication, most miscommunication happens, because generally the channels have broken down quite a lot more at that point. Again, when you're in pre-production, everybody's in one location together. The production designer could literally probably run over, smack the director on the back of the head and be like, what do you think of this, if you really wanted to, if it was desperate, right? Whereas with VFX vendors, there's often, you know, like 10 to 12 different companies working with going through like multiple different VFX supervisors working on different scenes, and the director has to see all of them every single day, and it can be very, very hard to get any kind of like solid opinions on stuff, which makes the process a million times more difficult.
On previous jobs, it happened to me that I would be working for like a month or something, and I'm like, oh, what did the director thinks of it? And they're like, we don't know, we haven't showed him yet. I'm like, yeah, but I've done all these versions and changes for you guys. And they're like, yeah, but no, we haven't shown him yet. I'm like, okay.
He's been busy.
And yeah, and so you're like, oh, I'm so glad I'm done that, and it looks cool, and I'm happy that they're happy with it. But then you realize that, no, you just passed their like pass, and then there's like someone else that might just go back and say, oh no, I want a shrimp now, not a dragon.
Which is a problem in of itself, because unfortunately, you know, films are very kind of like single-minded in some respects. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're a collaborative medium, mm-hmm. but directors do kind of have the be-all end-all say on stuff, excluding producers. Mm-hmm. And so what can happen is that other people through that pipeline want to put their imprint on the film mm-hmm. without quite necessarily understanding what the director themselves wants. Mm-hmm. And so that's then where you can have even more miscommunication happening, because then, like you said, somebody delays your work being shown for over a month.
Yeah.
And then they show it to the director and they go, well, what is this? Sorry. And they go, oh, I thought this is what you wanted. And they go, no. And they're like, well, actually, it was the concept art department's fault. And it all just gets like lumped onto you.
It's Daniel's fault. Everyone, point him. But yeah, that said, by the way, I've myself never been in a case where I had to do as many iterations as Dan did, for example. So it varies the project, right? Sometimes on VFX stuff, I had to do like 3 iterations, which is, I think,
I've had projects like that, right, too. Yeah.
So it happens that sometimes you do 20, sometimes you do more, sometimes you do less. But it's not always that, because I think we just made it sound awful. It's not that bad.
But it can be that bad.
It can be bad, yeah.
In fact, I would say in the majority of my experiences working in post, it is that bad. But that's just my experience.
Yeah. I think I've been lucky so far.
Yeah. It does. It depends who you're working with, where they are, why they're doing it, all these other things. And, you know, it's not to say that it can't be a rewarding part of the process, but I'd say it's definitely less fun than other sections of the job in film.
On the bright side, when you do a VFX frame which gets approved, that's most likely going to be a one-to-one frame in the movie.
Yeah.
And if it gets greenlit for you to share it, that's going to be a great thing to share, because you're like, oh, look at this frame I designed. And then it's like, oh yeah, it's just like the movie. Yeah. And
except, fair warning, it will only be on screen for 0.5 of a second.
Yes.
So you get a very brief glimpse of joy as you see it go, especially with explosions. That's always a big thing. They're like, this is the end explosion. It's got to be epic. It's got to be really cool. And like, you're explaining to them like, and then it could implode and they could do this. As if it's like a full, like, drawn out, like, I don't know, sequence from Dragon Ball, you know, where they're like doing the Kamehameha or whatever at each other, and it's like, da, 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 da. And then actually in the film, usually it just goes, and it's done.
is the Oppenheimer explosion.
Yeah, yeah. Before you can even like tap your friend sitting in the cinema next to you to go, I did. Oh, it's gone.
So, in terms of games,
how does that link?
Post production. Like, quickly talking about production as well, because you guys kind of like skipped over it, but like production in games, like once the game is already being made and you know all the art direction and everything, you'll be doing a lot of like just paint overs of the level designs and stuff like that. You'll probably be doing some designs as well, you know, whatever creatures or whatever you will be building in the game.
Just before you jump too far ahead, can you explain how you do paint overs of levels and like what the process for that even is?
It's kind of, you just get screenshots from the 3D department that's working, let's say, on the environment, since that's what I worked on the most. Sometimes you can ask them what angle you want it from, depending. Sometimes they'll just send you a screenshot, be like, overpaint this, and you have to...
And you go, okay.
Yeah, and then they'll be go like, make it better. And or like make it fit the art direction kind of more. Sometimes they don't know kind of what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Or what's up, Jules?
Because at this stage, there's no design involved at all, right? It's just a level designer who made the area look fun.
Not quite. No. So because you did all the blue sky work and all the pre-production work and all this stuff, and the environment team that already there, like they already built some assets and stuff like that. At this point, they're already building the levels with some art assets already finished.
So it's more than a blockout.
Exactly, it's more than a blockout. It's not going to be too often, I think, that you'll be working in production and then they'll be sending you just like pure level blockouts
from what I've heard, I do think that it happened a lot, like on Last of Us, and that's what I did with Naughty Dog and whatever, but I don't know. This is just from what I know, mm-hmm, I can say. I believe teams nowadays already have some assets that they will pre-build, and they'll send you a level that they'll already have. Maybe it's not going to be like fully in color with textures, but it will be more than just like cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, especially, actually, maybe I'll add to this, especially on the, this depends actually on the type of game that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe in games that are, actually, I'm not going to go into detail here, but it
he
just
stopped himself, ladies and gentlemen. He just didn't break NDA like a real professional.
So you will be working on overpaints over whatever levels they send you,
yeah,
with something that already is looking okay. And then they'll just ask you to either bring in more core towards the final art direction, or maybe they don't know quite what they want in there. Maybe they don't know the lighting situation. They're like, oh, can you make it a bit more darker, moodier, or something like that? You're just going to do a paint over for them, and then they're going to switch it around, make it look better. Or maybe you already know what kind of other assets they've built, and you think there are other assets that could fit into this area better. So you're just going to be like, well, we're just going to hit these things, put it around here, and it's going to look a lot better. Yeah,
it's like you're the art direction experts in a way.
Yeah, at this point,
and so, these guys are great at level design, but they're not. There's not this art designers themselves.
Exactly, it's like they kind of know the art direction, but they don't know everything because they don't know everything about shape design. They don't know everything, like all these ideas that you've put into the art direction material of like what makes things scary, what makes things look pretty, what makes things look like they. They whisper through the sand. I don't know what that means, but whatever, you know.
I can just see you, Stefan, whispering through the sand.
You know, how do you make rocks feel like they are mysterious?
I can see Stefan sending back a concept to the environment team with no paint over, but he just scrawled over it and read, whispers in the sand.
Yeah. So how do you achieve that kind of look? It's something that you know, and you just need to point them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into post-production. I don't even know if that happens
so
in games.
Do you also design props? I mean, not props, but assets, right? Designing specific assets, let's say a car, when does that happen? Is that before that or after that, what you just described, sorry? Or designing guns or cars?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Mm-hmm. It will be happening throughout the production.
Mm-hmm.
You already have a few main assets at that point designed. So like, let's say the character has guns or something like that. At this point, you should already have the character designed. Like the main character will be designed and his main guns will be designed. But there will still be a lot of guns that might be kind of like 3D blockouts that you'll have to still design and then 3D modelers model it. Same goes with cars. By the time you are in production, you already have your main car, you know, but maybe there is a motorcycle, maybe there is like a quad cycle or something, what is it called? Those you need to like still finish designing and sketching. So kind of similar how it is in movies, like not everything will be designed by the time you are in production. You'll still be like finishing things off, but the main things will be already like finished and drawn.
And so then I guess people are finishing the game, and as they really finish the game, there's less and less work for concept artists to do.
There is,
right?
Yeah.
Because you, as you said, you just established everything. And then maybe DLC? Or...
Yeah. Well, at this point, you don't know if you're going to make DLC because you probably don't have the funding for it. But what you're going to do, as I said, most likely you'll be doing still some pitch work for the marketing material, potentially. Mm-hmm. You'll be doing some pretty concepts for that. Like what's going to be at the front of the DVD or something.
The cover, the posters, the Steam page.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. And you might be, as I said, as a concept team, if you are in high studio, you'll be moving to potentially another project. Not necessarily a DLC, I think. Unless maybe there is something funding, big people think it has a lot of potential, you'll start doing some DLC work maybe.
Yeah,
and then that's it. You're done.
I guess as well, if you're in games, right, and you're doing a live service game, which is becoming increasingly consistent and popular.
Especially like every game that comes out nowadays.
Yes. That is never ending theoretically, so it's probably no such thing as like finishing it up.
I finished 50 guns more.
Yeah, I wonder like what happens maybe like once you release a live service game, you maybe never moved on to like pitching another project, so you just still kept working on it. You did some marketing, maybe had a month off or something, and then they bring you back on because it's a live service game. You'll have to be, because like I imagine when you have a live service game, you'll have multiple DLCs, like DLCs planned planned up front.
Yeah.
So you already be working on the DLCs that are after the release of the game, with potentially a small core of the team of writers, maybe even some 3D artists, to make sure that like when the main game is released, already these assets are almost finished.
Yes.
So they can, so there can be another DLC, another DLC. Maybe there's like, I don't know, let's say there's like five DLCs planned for the future, but I doubt that the company will plan for more because you can never know how well the game.
I guess it can be a season pass, battle pass.
Yeah, something like that.
Imagine a battle pass for films.
You want to know if that, the guy dies or not?
That would work by you watching the same film multiple times, and as you watch it, you would unlock special funny hats for the actors on the screen.
Yeah.
Dude, let's go. Yeah. That's the future, man.
So you don't like the ending? If you watch it again, you can change it.
Yeah.
You can change the ending. That's kind of funny, though.
Yeah. The director's cut.
What if you watch it
enough? That already exists, actually.
You watch it enough times, they send you like little perks, you know?
Yeah.
Little boxes.
Oh, God. That'd be...
Did you guys watch Donnie Darko?
No. I heard about this.
I watched it last night.
What is it? I'm very interested.
Quite depressing. No, sorry. This is just so unrelated, but I was just thinking about Donnie Darko. It really... You could watch it.
You recommend it?
Yeah. I think maybe you should watch the director's cut because there's apparently a lot more explanation about the point of the film.
Okay.
It's quite an eccentric film with the theatrical cut. But
okay.
It's interesting.
I have...
Anyway, so maybe you could like get a season pass for Donnie Darko and make him wear a funny little hat.
Yeah.
Is what I was really trying to say.
You know what I should get a season pass for is the Concept 101 podcast. If you listen to us many, many times, then we will send you another episode to listen to many times.
If you listen to the Concept 101 podcast many, many times, then eventually what happens is you get to come to one of our very exclusive, definitely not free, public... What are they called again?
Drink
meetups?
And Draws.
Yeah. Draw meetup.
That's true, by the way. That's a great opportunity to talk about. We do a Drink and Draws.
Do you like the way I pulled that in, Jules?
That was amazing.
Thank you.
That was amazing.
I actually was thinking about it at the same time, but...
Shut up!
For you guys who are in the UK and I guess in London, we also do organize, of course, free to attend Drink and Draws and Muse and meetups once per month.
Yeah, which is one is coming next week.
Yeah, but that's going to come out after... This podcast will come out after it happens.
Oh yeah.
So well, one just happened, so you can look on our Instagram and you'll be, wow, I'm so sad I missed it. But good news, there'll be more. And so museum meetups, we basically go to a museum and we draw together and we meet and we have fun and we are socially awkward with each other. And
it's just like the podcast in real life.
Yeah, those usually happen on a weekend.
Yeah. And drinking draws is the same thing, but since people drink alcohol, they stop being socially awkward, which is great.
And those usually happen during the week on Thursday.
Yeah, it's a week on Thursday.
Which the only reason I think we're bringing up is because the last one we went to, nobody knew that we did other stuff. They were like, oh, like the podcast. And we were like, what?
Do you know we also have a big event once per year? They're like, no.
Yeah, very confusing.
Yeah.
Anyway, talking about that, God knows when that's going to happen.
Oh yeah.
Still organizing that.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll talk about the main event when we have more information about it. It's currently on the.
Currently, it's in pitch and pre-production phase.
Yeah. I would say it's been in pitch and pre-production phase for a whole year.
Has it?
No. But since
a few months.
October,
we've been working very hard.
October,
on it.
Yeah.
We want to make something good.
Yeah.
So yeah,
has its ups and downs, you know.
I believe that's the end of the podcast, isn't it?
If it has to be. I was hoping we'd just sit here in silence for another hour.
Yeah. Well, it turns out we have three more podcasts to record today.
Whoa. Definitely not that many.
All right.
Anyway,
so that will be the end of today's episode. We hope you enjoyed listening. And if you want more, please feel free to subscribe and ring the notification bell. We release episodes every 2 weeks. If you want any more additional information about the podcast or the event, be sure to check out our Instagram linked in the description below. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
See you.